Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 18th of September. This hour of the program, we're looking at what Congress has been doing lately and what will their new roles be during this financial crisis. Jody Schneider is our guest, senior editor of Congressional Quarterly. Senator Christopher Dodd, Senate Banking Chairman, has said of the financial crisis, over the long term, we'll be holding hearings on what Congress can do to restructure the architecture of our regulatory system so as to minimize the kind of events that we've witnessed in the past couple weeks from occurring again. We'll talk about what role government in all of this. Today, top executives from the big three auto companies are in Washington to make a case for a $25 billion loan to help them retool their plants for more fuel-efficient vehicles. We'll look at these issues and many more, why congressional approval ratings are so low. Jody will be talking about that, and we'll be welcoming your phone calls as we always do. The number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you'd like to send an email, you can do that at talk@WPR.org. Hello, Jody. Thanks so much for being with us.
Good morning.
Hi. Let's start with the role of the government and Congress, particularly in holding hearings on what Congress can do to restructure the architecture of our regulatory system. What kind of role does Congress have in that kind of restructuring? What can they do?
Well, I think what's interesting about what's been going on the past week or so is Congress hasn't had a lot to do with it at all, and in some ways they feel blindsided. I think there's been a feeling among the leadership of both chambers that they, especially the AIG loan that the Fed made, are essentially, you know, an effective sort of takeover of AIG, the $85 billion government loan, that they feel that that's not something that necessarily should be happening without their advice and consent.
Mm-hmm.
And of course it did. They think it's a bit, they are getting frustrated at what they perceive as a piecemeal approach by the Bush administration to the crisis after this takeover. I think the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac takeovers, they were more involved in that. They had set up legislation that allowed that to happen, thinking that those institutions were too big to fail and they had a quasi-governmental role anyhow. But here, this is one that just sort of happened, and Congress, you know, learned about it as it was happening. So I think there is frustration on the part of lawmakers. However, the question is, what can they do? What is their role? I think they are going to be having some hearings, but I don't know that there's a whole lot they're going to be able to do at this point in a meaningful way to really change anything. There's a lot of cleanup that's being played right now, and there's really not a direct role for Congress in that.
Was there a direct role? They have been criticized for being asleep at the switch. Were they?
Well, I think the extent of the credit crisis and the credit crunch took many people, including the Federal Reserve, by surprise. Congress has had opportunities to do some things in terms of the mortgage crisis, and they finally passed some legislation this year. Some people say it was too little, too late, and they have been looking a long time at whether to more tightly regulate Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Now, of course, that equation, that's sort of a moot question because they're effectively being, you know, taken over by the government, at least for the short run.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, you know, I think there's a lot of blame to go around if you're looking to blame. And, of course, the blame game is being played in Washington. The Democrats in particular are saying, you know, the Bush administration was asleep at the switch. And the Republicans are saying, well, the Democrats
right.
are in charge of Congress. Why
right.
can't they do something?
Mm-hmm.
And both sides are saying that neither presidential candidate has a real meaningful economic plan. And, frankly, we haven't heard a lot of specifics about their economic plan at this point. Barack Obama is saying that, you know, that this is failed leadership. This didn't happen under the Democrats' watch, and it wouldn't happen under his. And John McCain is saying that he would make some changes in the way things are run, but the way to do it is not to tax everybody. So I think there's, you know, neither of them have really come to the fore yet with a very specific economic plan.
What about their ideas for federal involvement in our markets? What are they talking about when we hear more deregulation, less deregulation? And is there a party stand on one side or the other of that?
Well, you know, the traditional stance, of course, has been that the Republicans have said that they want to see the markets be able to run as markets and to be able to regulate themselves wherever possible, and that the government steps in, you know, as a watchdog role and to curb real abuses, but that they shouldn't get too involved in the running of the markets. Now, of course, we had the Sarbanes-Oxley law passed several years ago after the Enron and MCI and other scandals, and basically that does have much tighter accounting regulations for companies and gives a much greater and much stronger role for the Securities and Exchange Commission, and that's been running, and the Bush administration ended up, you know, having to support that because they really there was such a lack of confidence in the ability of the system to protect individual shareholders.
I think at this point, Jody, a lot of Americans are worried about their money, and they're worried about retirement, and they're worried that they're going to lose a lot of money, and many already have in the last few days, and they want somebody to step in and do something.
That's right.
Or everybody's going to be criticized. Are we right to expect more from the administration, from Congress, in dealing with all of this? We need help.
Yeah, I don't think Congress can do a whole lot about the markets, that's for sure, and I don't think the administration can. I mean, you know, this is the thing about a free market. You get market cycles. Now, I think the questions, and there will be a lot of looking at this, the question's going to be oversight now. And Henry Waxman, who is in charge of the Oversight and Government Reform Committee, is going to be holding some hearings, both about the AIG deal as well as Lehman. And I think, you know, they basically are going to be saying, hold on, was this handled the way it should have been handled? And I think, you know, people are going to be looking back and saying, when should the government be taking over things? When should they not? But effectively, you know, if the markets hadn't tumbled the way they had and these would have worked the way the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac deal worked, I don't think Congress would be asking these questions. There isn't a whole lot anybody can do right now. People are just going to have to, and I know no one likes to hear this, but
right.
They're just going to have to buckle their seatbelts and go for the ride if you're, you know, but what the experts tell us is correct. If you're in the long term, you know, 401ks and IRAs and retirement funds and your kids' college education funds, you know, if you have a bit of time to save for those, you shouldn't touch those. You know, make sure you're in diversified investments, make sure that they're with good institutions, and just hang on for the ride. If it's money you need soon, you know, you need to start thinking about whether you do need to be in safer investments, and that's what so many people did yesterday. The Treasury was effectively running out of money because everybody wanted to be in government bonds, which is actually a good sign that they think the faith and credit of the U.S. Government, you know, in terms of the bond market, you know, that is sort of a good sign, and that foreign investors still want to be in government security, U.S. government securities. But there is not, frankly, a whole lot individual people can do at this point. And panicking and running and trying to liquidate your assets and go into gold or something is probably the worst thing you can do.
Mm-hmm. So, well, a couple things. I heard, and I don't know how much they printed. I can't remember the figure, but the news was saying last night the government printed all this new money yesterday. What does that mean? Why do they do that? And doesn't it become worthless if you keep printing more and more and more money?
Well, basically, what they're pumping money into the banking system to try to basically show that, you know, things are solid and the money is flowing and that, you know, we're not going to have a banking crisis the way we did in the Depression era, that kind of thing. So they're basically trying to show that, you know, while there is there's huge problems on Wall Street right now, and we're having this restructuring essentially on Wall Street of our institutions. And you know, if you look at your, you know, mutual funds, you know, you've lost money on paper. What they're trying to do is say, look, there is not a crisis in terms of your banking accounts, and the banks are solid, and the government is solid. And I think that's the message that's coming through, and trying to get this free fall in the markets to stop. As well. So I think that, you know, this is the government trying to step in and try to regulate things and try to prevent panic. And, you know, they basically, because there is so much interest in buying the, you know, in people moving to bonds, they want to make sure that there's, you know, there's the ability for people to keep doing that.
And Judy, what does it mean in terms of the government when we hear this phrase, the government is taking over AIG? What exactly does that mean? And what does it mean in terms of congressional oversight? Who's going to be minding the store here?
Well, again, Congress doesn't have a direct role in this deal. The Fed has the ability to do what they did. Now, the questions that are going to be asked are, should they have had that ability, and should they have to go to Congress for some kind of authorization?
Right.
But basically, what happened there was there's an $85 billion loan that the New York Fed, essentially, gave to AIG. States still regulate insurance companies. They're not regulated. That's another interesting issue that, the Congress doesn't even really have a role in regulating AIG because individual states regulate insurance companies.
Oh, they do.
Mm-hmm. And this has been an issue. This has come up from time to time in Congress. It came up after Katrina, whether there should be what they call an optional federal charter that the federal government has a much greater role in the regulation of insurance companies. But the insurance companies have never wanted that, or most of them don't. There's some debate. And the individual states, this has been a power source for them and an ability for them to try to, exert some power over the insurance companies in their own state. So they have never gone for that either. But it raises that question, too. It raises all kinds of interesting questions. But basically, what has happened is they've given them an $85 billion government loan in exchange for, a large portion of their stock. And so essentially it is a government takeover. The government is controlling the company right now.
So what does it mean when Democrats are now pushing for $50 billion more for public works projects, jobless benefits, heating for the winter, food aid for poor people in this country? You've got top executives from the big three auto companies in Washington today trying to get $25 billion in loans to help them build more fuel-efficient vehicles. Considering the financial woes that we're having right now, are those projects and those requests pretty much doomed?
Well, I don't think so. That's what's interesting. Even as all this is going on Wall Street, Congress, let's remember that there are 435 seats up in the House of Representatives come November 4th, and of course the presidential race, and then about a third of the Senate is up. So they're gonna get out of Dodge here after next week and run for their seats. So many of them, that means that they want to do some things before they leave that they can run on. And they haven't done a whole lot these last few months. They have not passed appropriations bills. They're sort of kicking that till after the election. There's been a lot of things that, haven't gotten done. And I think, the low approval ratings that you speak of, that you spoke of, at the beginning of the show, that's the public has gotten wind of that, a lot of the public, a great proportion of the public, doesn't think that Congress is doing what they've been sent there to do. So in this final week and a half here, they're going to try to do some things. And one of them is to try to do yet another economic stimulus package that may go to the House floor by the end of the week. But it looks like a bit of a long shot right now. What they probably will end up doing is add it at the end of the year. They'll come back in what we call a lame duck session and attach it to the spending bills they're going to need to pass, or what we call a continuing resolution to keep the government operating. Although, they certainly will try to debate it some so that people can say, hey, I was really for this. It's unclear what the exact contents of that bill are at this point, but Democratic leaders are saying it would include about $50 billion. It would have a price tag of about $50 billion and provide funding for infrastructure, food stamps, low-income heating program, and Medicaid money for the states. The states have been really, clamoring for that. There was a 13-week extension of unemployment benefits in the war supplemental this year, but they did not get additional extension for high unemployment states, and they're trying to do that as well. It's unclear whether that'll get through. That's expensive, too. So there's a lot of things kind of rattling around there. I think on the automakers are here today, and I doubt very much that's going to happen. They're going to listen to them, but I think given some of the sensitivity, shall we say, over the whole bailout issue, I think at this point that's going to be a hard sell.
Right. So Congress is getting out of Dodge to run for re-election, and they probably shouldn't get out of Dodge, but they have to if they want to be re-elected, huh?
Right, and they're saying now that Nancy Pelosi, the House Speaker, yesterday said that oversight activities will continue after the Congress adjourns. The Henry Waxman's committee holding these couple hearings on the Fed's actions. And that so they would come back for those, or I guess the people who needed to be back for those would be back for those. And the Senate Majority Leader, Harry Reid, yesterday basically said the chamber is not going to formally adjourn after it finishes its work. For instance, they, you know, they'll leave town next week, but they're going to keep the chamber open so that they could run some hearings as well, so some committees could meet as well. So I think they're going to sort of say, hey, we haven't, you know, we're not really adjourning, we're not
right.
really leaving, even though most of them, of course,
right.
will do so.
Jody Schneider is our guest, senior editor of Congressional Quarterly, and we're going to start taking your phone calls in just one moment. The number is 800-486-8655, and our email address is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program today, we'll be speaking with Bing West. He is the author of The Strongest Tribe, War, Politics, and the Endgame in Iraq. He's a Marine combat veteran, served as Assistant Secretary of Defense in the Reagan administration, and this new book is based on 14 extended field trips over 6 years. So that's coming up, hour number two. Let's start welcoming phone calls for Jody, and we'll begin with Scott from Appleton. Hi, Scott.
Yeah, hi. Thanks again for a wonderful program.
Sure.
I have a question for her, if she's able to elaborate on it. Several years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, you had a guest on, and some statements that are made, some things you hear you never forget. You had a guest on that made the statement, after the 2000 election for Wall Street, it was like getting presents under the Christmas tree. What would cause someone to make a statement like that? Was it changes in philosophy, policy, both? And I'd like to get your guest's input on a previous guest you had on making that statement.
Okay, Judy?
Well, I think, you know, Republican administrations, and particularly the Bush administration, have been viewed as friendly to business. And to their whole goal is to try to, you know, cut taxes and to allow the markets to operate so that businesses don't have to pay high costs of taxes and high costs of regulation, what they view as unfairly high costs that don't contribute in a meaningful way to the running of the economy. And one of the things, I mean, a Christmas tree bill that passed in 2003 when the Republicans controlled Congress and Bush was in the White House was the corporate tax bill. Basically, it restructured taxes for corporations and cut taxes for many of them in very large ways and allowed them to get tax breaks for overseas operations, things like that. So I don't know if your guest was referring to that, but that has often been called the Christmas tree bill here in Washington. And so I think that, you know, there has been a history of that. At the same time, because of the concerns and what happened with the fallout of some of the accounting scandals at the earlier part of this decade, the Bush administration has had to do some things with regulation, including the Sarbanes-Oxley law that they at first didn't support and then had turned around and had to support because there was just such an outcry about what had happened at some of these firms, most notably Enron. And so at the same time that they're, you know, that they've been pushing for lower taxes and lower corporate taxes, they've actually had to get on the side of some tougher regulation of businesses.
We hear of this word Wall Street. Wall Street feels this way. Wall Street feels that way. Is there, and I don't know who we're talking about, and I really don't know after the events of the week who we're talking about, but is there a desire on the part of the corporate community right now for one or the other of the parties to win in November or not?
Well, I think, you know, the Republicans still view themselves as the party of business and the party of you know, business leaders in terms of things like, you know, taxation and lower tax rates and eliminating, for instance, some of the taxes that they view as burdensome and coming down, having lower capital gains rates, those kinds of things. That tends to be the Republican posture, and therefore it's usually supported by business. It will be very interesting to see, I think, in the next few weeks, how both candidates respond to this crisis. Right now, they've been responding, you know, just by kind of blaming the other party. But whether they come up with very specific kinds of economic plans for dealing with these kind of woes, it's a very complicated situation. It's a complicated sort of set of factors that led us into this mess. And right now, neither candidate has really been addressing it in a complicated way. Senator McCain is not, no, economics is not a strong point of his. Now, you know, foreign and policy and defense and all that are much stronger areas for him. And, of course, Senator Obama is relatively untested on this. He, you know, he hasn't been in the Senate terribly long, has come up with some things that he claims are going to help, you know, working people. But we haven't really seen a strong program, certainly not one that addresses some of the much more complex issues that are occurring in the markets today. And I think that's a point where, you know, they both stand to gain some ground if they can do that. But, of course, there's risk inherent in that as well. And if they come up with the things that are going to alienate parts of their base, they you know, that's a very large risk.
Right. But it's also difficult, isn't it, to come up with a complex plan and explain it in the 15 seconds you get on television every night, and that's how people make their decisions for the most part. They don't read the complex plans.
Well, that's true, and I think, you know, that translating things like economics into terms that people can understand, I think that's important. But I think at this point, neither candidate has really tried very hard. I mean, Senator Obama, in his speech at the convention, you know, while obviously a grand speech, he said, "I'm going to give you some specifics on what I'm going to do for the economy," and then laid out very few specifics and really virtually no way of how he was going to pay for it. That's another issue that nobody's really talking about, is the deficit and how much, you know, we're all adding to the deficit and going further into debt to pay for these things.
Thanks very much, Scott, for your call. And we go next to Tom. Hi, Tom. You're on the air.
Good morning. My comment and my question, I don't have a goose that lays golden eggs in my backyard. I don't have a money tree like the Fed has. And when the government starts bailing out these companies and pumping funny money into the banking system, doesn't this devalue the dollar and in turn increase the cost to the consumer, which is us, to the products that are produced that we have to buy? And we're left holding basically the bill to these companies, which should be failing and be restructured and the profitable ends sold off and the not so profitable ends scrapped and the people that are responsible for it basically put out of business.
Well, I think you're raising a very good point, and I think this is going to be a sensitive issue in the election. I wonder how the candidates are going to, you know, they're going to have to respond to this issue. But there is increasingly, I think, a feeling, you know, out there on what we call Main Street and among, you know, regular consumers and people who just go to their jobs every day and, as you say, don't have money trees in their backyards, that while the government has been loath to bail them out, and, you know, we've had so many people lose their homes to foreclosure and other things, some because they made bad decisions, others, you know, because they were led to believe that they could afford these things by sometimes unscrupulous and sometimes just, you know, good marketing by banks and mortgage companies, those people didn't get a bailout. And yet at the same time, now the government is doing that effectively for companies. Now, the reason that they're doing it for these companies and these very large companies that they view as too big to fail is because if they did fail and the amount of damage that would be done, large-scale economic damage, would be so great that it would catch, you know, everyone would be caught up in it, and individual consumers would be hurt much worse than if they didn't, is the theory. But at the same time, I think there is going to be a lot of resentment by people that, you know, they worked hard for a living and nobody's bailing them out, and yet when it comes to companies, companies are getting bailed out, and what, you know, where is the government's, you know, compassion both for working people and good sense when it comes to corporate America.
Right. And put this in the equation, too. The other thing that's happening that upsets just the average person is that these companies are failing and the people who are running them are walking away with $30 million bonuses, and people talk about, and the candidates have talked about, greed on Wall Street. But how does that play not only into the election but into all of this, it's seemingly excessive amount of greed and getting exorbitant amounts of money when you failed?
Well, of course, Wall Street has always operated on greed and fear, and those, you know, that's not going to change. I mean, you have to have that kind of incentive, or people are not going to take the huge risks that they take.
Hmm.
But at the same time, I think that the question of when these companies fail and are taken over, and you know, the people who work for them lose their jobs. I mean, we're
right.
I don't know if you saw the pictures of people packing up their boxes and, in London and in New York who worked for Lehman this week. Even though they may have been making good money and had bonuses, they're still losing their jobs, and they're going to have very difficult time finding jobs in what's a very, very obviously difficult job market on Wall Street and in financial services now. And there's going to be a lot of pain there, and there may be some reverberations to cities like New York that, you know, have employed a lot of these folks, but that the people at the top seem to always do okay. And part of that is, you know, they have contracts. They have these golden parachutes that are contractual matters that, you know, legally are legally binding. Now, there has been talk in Washington, and I'm sure we're going to hear a lot about this over in coming weeks. And at Senator Representative Waxman's hearings, I think we're going to be hearing some of this as well, the oversight hearings, about should those contracts remain in effect if effectively the company has failed, and should we be paying them, you know, whatever it is, $30 million to walk away when they should be running away. And I think in the case of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, the executives there who have now left and they put in some other executives, there's already talk about whether they should be getting their bonuses. And I think Congress may have a role in that. And I do think that is going to be another one of these sensitive issues in a very, competitive election cycle. And so I think that I think lawmakers and in the administration are going to, you're going to be hearing some talk about that, and that, the whole pay-for-play system has to have some fairness injected into it.
Thank you, Tom, for your call. Amy from Racine is next. Hi, Amy.
Hi. I wondered if you could tell me what happened with the mental health parity bill, the compromise bill between the House and the Senate that hopefully was going to be voted on before this session ended.
I think there's still talk about trying to do that. Again, you know, it's one of the bills that there's a bunch of things that they have not gotten to, and that is one of them. And I think there's, you know, they keep talking about, okay, we're going to try to do this before we leave. We're going to try to do that before we leave. But again, it's probably, you know, it's a week and a day before they do that. So I think there's, you know, that's on the table that they would, that would be taken up, but whether it indeed will be before they leave, I think is an open question.
Thanks, Amy, for the call. Here's an email from Dave in Menominee, Michigan. McCain's former economic advisor, Senator Phil Graham, on December 15, 2000, hours before Congress was to leave for Christmas recess, had a 262-page amendment slipped into the appropriations bill. It forbade federal agencies to regulate the financial derivatives that greased the skids for passing along risky mortgage-backed securities to investors. Isn't this the reason that we have this problem with our economy today?
That the derivatives are the reason that we have the problem?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I think, you know, the derivatives are an interesting issue, and it's certainly part of the complexity. What has effectively happened is that there have been all these new, because of technology and technology in trading and in finance, there have been all these new financial instruments that have been developed over the past, you know, say, 5 years or so. And they're increasingly complex. A lot of the companies that engage in them don't even necessarily really understand what they're doing, but they're using them because it's a good way to make money, and it's a good way to make money quickly. Then what ends up happening is, in the case of, you know, mortgage loans, for instance, they trade them using all these kinds of instruments. They don't have the loans anymore, and then when things start going bad in the housing market, which of course happened, no one really knows exactly what they're holding. And these swaps, for instance, these credit swaps, things can start coming down very quickly, and you can lose a lot of money very quickly. So I think derivatives are part of that. I wouldn't say it's the whole cause of it. Had the housing market not declined so precipitously, if there had not been so many people who basically the amount they owed on their loans went up so quickly because they had, you know, these adjustable rate mortgages where the rates were resetting so quickly, that all happened at the same time. Then you had a credit crunch. So I think there's so many different factors that occurred here, but certainly derivatives are part of this changing scenario.
As you hear people speak about all of these issues, Jody, do you think that there's somebody out there with terrific wisdom who can guide us through all of this? We don't seem to have confidence in anybody.
Well, I think there's two people right now who are trying to do that. One of them is Henry Paulson, who is the Treasury Secretary, who was brought in by President Bush. Didn't necessarily want the job. He, you know, was kind of a titan of Wall Street and has a lot of other interests, the environment among them, China, you know, doing something to try to better our relations with China among them. And after, you know, a lot of arm twisting, decided, you know, came onto the administration, and he has really been at the center of a lot of these deals and a lot of the trying to calm the markets. And I, you know, I don't know that anybody could do a great job in this, but he has been kind of a calming influence and has brought his knowledge of Wall Street to this. And I think we could do a lot worse, frankly, than having Henry Paulson at the helm right now.
Mm-hmm.
Ben Bernanke, in the same breath, you know, people criticize the Fed and the Fed chairman, and should they have taken over AIG, for instance. But again, he has tried, you know, he inherited a lot of these problems as Fed chairman, and he is trying to use the weight of that office and trying to steer this ship so that, you know, they don't do things in the short run that could have much longer long-term reverberations, but at the same time calm the markets, because you know, the continued decline and the continued loss of confidence in the markets is really going to endanger the economy.
Right.
So they are, for better or worse, at the helm there, and I think, again, I, you know, this is an opinion, but in my opinion, I think that we could do a lot worse than Henry Paulson and Ben Bernanke right now.
Zeke from Fish Creek next. Hi, Zeke.
Hi, thank you for having me on. I'm old enough to have lived during the Depression, when my mother had to try to support her sister, her sister's husband, and myself. We were very poor. It was very difficult to even get bread on the table. It was a crisis that is similar in its starting point to what we have now. And I'm saying this because earlier in this program, and just a moment ago, the speaker, your guest, said there's nothing we can do about it when you asked her. There's nothing that Congress can do about it when you asked her. The only person that really seems to be on top of it, as she said a moment ago, are two people that were appointed by the present administration. I would like to ask your guest, does she remember what Franklin Delano Roosevelt did in leading our country, in a president leading our country out of a crisis that just about was destroying everybody? It was destroying jobs. It was destroying the banking system. It was caused by similar, not the same, events that are starting to cause another meltdown now. Wouldn't your speaker, your guest, acknowledge the fact that something can be done if we have the right leadership in the presidential office? And with that, I'll just listen.
Thank you, Zeke, for the call.
Well, first of all, as you'll recall, Franklin Roosevelt came in, you know, after the Depression had been in full swing for a while, and took very, you know, major steps in terms of using government funds and government, using the government as a tool to try to get people working again. And it worked in part, and a war worked in part. Let's face it, World War II put a lot of people back to work. So I think I hope we don't have to wait for something like that. I hope the economy does not get that bad that we need a president to step in and, you know, kind of set up programs to that really change the nature of the relationship between the government and private industry. That may have to happen. But at this point, I don't think we're talking about that. An interesting point here is the economy overall has been fairly resilient. I mean, obviously, the economy has not been growing in the past year, and we've seen continued job losses. But for the most part, the economy has weathered these storms, this huge housing crunch, this huge credit crisis, and now this crisis on Wall Street, with pretty good resiliency. You know, the jobless rate is nowhere near historic highs. In many states, in many parts of the country, the jobless rate is you know, within a kind of moderate range. And you're still seeing, you know, seeing industries that are pretty strong and resilient. And even the housing industry has begun coming back somewhat. So it's, there's sort of, while all this is going on, a lot of America is still resilient. And then the other thing, energy prices. Energy prices was another huge slam. So I think there's a lot of, I don't think we are seeing a lot of huge weakness in the core industries that isn't related to things like having to pay extra, you know, higher gas prices, like the airline industry, for instance. Their problems are a result of that. But I think that their economists say that the economy has been, you know, fairly resilient, and that if we can kind of make it through some of these patches, that that we may not have a long, prolonged recession.
But what about all the people who have been trying to sell their homes, who are taking half what the price is worth? You go to the grocery store and the cost of just about everything is way up from what it was a year ago, a year and a half ago. People are working jobs where they're not making a lot more money year by year. What's happening to all those people? What about their economic resiliency?
Well, I think it's a tough time. It's a, you know, there's business cycles, and we've been through, this country's been through recessions before. You know, I'm sure that those of us, any adult, you know, past a certain age has lived through several of them. And it is tough, and people do have to sacrifice. And I think the question going forward for the economy once we get, you know, through this is, how are they going to create jobs? And how are they going to create good jobs? And how are we going to allow people to, you know, to move forward and to make more money rather than being stagnant? But that isn't a question. The current crisis is really happening, kind of around that. I mean, that's not the question there. The question right now is Wall Street, and are these major firms going to continue to fail? And what's going to happen with the stock market?
But in the business of creating jobs, let's go back to Congress for a moment. That could be a significant role for them, couldn't it?
In what sense?
I don't know. In terms of maybe, I don't know, when things get so bad that you have to initiate some kind of markets that are different. And if Congress can do this to help create more alternative fuels, to help do maybe even public works projects. The other guy referenced FDR to get people working again in good paying jobs.
Yeah, I think, well, I think the role that we may see for Congress, I don't think we're going to see a works program. First of all, I think that a lot of the country, you know, that played very well at that particular time and in that particular crisis. I think if you started talking about doing those on a large scale at this point, you would have a lot of resentment. There's you know, many people in America do not want to see the government in that kind of role. I mean, most Republicans certainly don't. And a lot of Democrats have gone beyond that. You know, we got rid of welfare. We don't have a welfare program anymore, for instance. The whole safety net issue has really become a, how does the government backstop people? And I think the questions that are going to be in Congress, and I think we'll certainly see this when we see a new Congress in January, is what role does the government play in supporting industries to do things like create alternative forms of energy so that we are not as dependent on foreign oil. I think both sides of the aisle agree on that. The drilling issue is a big issue. Should we be supporting doing more of that so that we can get more oil from our own shores, from our own, so that we're not, again, buying as much foreign oil? I think those are going to be the kinds of things. What kinds of support can be given to various industries? Perhaps job retraining programs. You haven't heard the candidates talk a lot about that, but there had been, certainly 4 years ago, there was a lot of talk about when people lose their jobs because of overseas competition, what should the government do to try to help them get retrained so that they can get other kinds of jobs? I think those are the kinds of things you're going to hear Congress talk a lot about over the next couple of years.
Jim from Waupun. Hi, Jim.
Good morning. This bailout of Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae and AIG and Lehman Brothers and Bear Stearns, it takes me back to my memories of growing up on the farm when we were raising pigs, actually. We used to, in the morning when we went out to feed them, we would pour the food in the big trough. Then one pig would come over and start feeding, and then pretty soon another one, and then pretty soon there was this rush of pigs to the trough to feed. I really resent that whole takeover proposal, because for years, those who differed from my political views kept telling me, look, the free market has to do its job. It's a global economy, and you must remember that things are different now. if people lose jobs, there's not anything that we can do about that. That's the free market in operation. I heard that when NAFTA was passed in 1992 with Bill Clinton and all the way on through. All about free market. Let the free market do its job. But when the big people with the big bucks stand to lose, now it's no longer free market principles that apply to them. They want to come to us, the taxpayers, to bail them out. I've become very cynical and decided that, indeed, you can fool most of the people most of the time.
Jody.
Well, I think the point you're making is one, and we talked about this a few minutes ago, that it's going to be a very sensitive issue if you know, both politically as well as for Congress to deal with. There is now this huge perception that the government is willing to bail out big companies, but they won't do that for individual people, that those who lost their homes, you know, it's sort of too bad, they made their decisions. But when a company that has such extensive interests is likely to go under, that they will bail them out. And I think that's going to be a big question. For instance, they didn't bail out Lehman. They decided, you know, they're going to let them fail. And some people said, okay, good, this is what the Fed and this is what the Bush administration should be doing, saying we're not going to keep doing this because people are going to lose confidence. But then they turned around and bailed out AIG because they decided that they couldn't, it was too big to fail, and that if that happened, there would be too many reverberations. But I think that's a big question that people have. What are the standards? When do you decide which one you can bail out and which one you can't? And I think that some people are going to start making the case that perhaps trying to have stemmed this mortgage crisis much sooner and to help individual homeowners might have actually forestalled some of these larger issues. And I think there's going to be a lot of questions asked about that. But I think with the views you just expressed, and I love the pig analogy.
Yes, a different kind of pig analogy. We like to hear it.
It's a great picture. That I think that is going to be something that these candidates are going to be hearing time and time again, and that they better figure out how they're going to address this.
Thanks, Jim, for your call. We'll take more phone calls in a moment. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and Jody Schneider is our guest, senior editor of Congressional Quarterly. Our phone number, our lines have been very busy, 800-486-8655, and we hope to get to some more emails, too, which we'll do momentarily. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program today, following the news from National Public Radio, Bing West, author of The Strongest Tribe, War, Politics, and the Endgame in Iraq. He is a Marine combat veteran, and the book is based on 14 extended field trips over 6 years. Let's go to actually an email, Jody. Greetings. I see this is from Razia in Appleton. I see that a lot of people in our country are afraid of the word socialism and are specifically Republicans, the banner holders of free market. How do we justify bailing out large corporations whose top officials don't take a cut in their bonus pay and our tax money bails their bad business decisions? I'd like you to comment on whether bailing out is a socialistic expectation or is in line with a capitalist idea.
That's an interesting question. Mm-hmm. I'm not an economist.
You know a lot about it, though, that's for sure, after this hour.
Inherent in the question is the issue of, what should be the government's role? And I think the government's role, certainly under the Bush administration, and even more so when there was Republican control of Congress as well as the White House, has been that the free markets, are left to run relatively unfettered, with some regulation. And we talked about, Sarbanes-Oxley, and there's more accounting regulations than there used to be. But, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, even though they were quasi-governmental entities, for instance, their stock was traded on Wall Street and they were privately and publicly traded companies, but they were regulated because, they they do have a implicit, and then it became very explicit government backing. They had a very weak regulator, and for years Congress tried to pass regulation that would more tightly regulate them. And you know, now of course Congress, that point has become moot because they're being effectively run by the government, or certainly for the time being. So I think that question as to whether we have abdicated, I'm sorry, too much of our responsibility allowing companies to run themselves, and then when they can't, then the government has to step in and really kind of take them over. I think there will be some questions asked about whether the Congress should be passing laws, and there should be that will really tighten regulation, and we may see soon some new regulations, or may even given some new powers to regulatory bodies to look at these kinds of things. I think when the dust settles, that's one of the things you're probably likely to see.
Let's spend a few minutes on energy. The House yesterday approved a measure easing a longstanding ban on offshore oil drilling. How far did they go? What other parts of the bill is here? And are we going to have some kind of legislation before Congress breaks at the end of the month?
Yes, well, that's the other big issue, and you know, Congress is paying attention to right now is drilling. The prospect that the moratorium on most new offshore drilling may lapse on October 1st has been good news to many Republicans, but it's putting these GOP senators, basically from coastal states, in a delicate position. They support opening more of the Outer Continental Shelf to oil and gas. But they're not keen about seeing, you know, drilling rigs a couple miles off their beaches. So these are some of the issues that you know, we're kind of hearing about now. This pressure on them has intensified as Democratic leaders acknowledge they cannot pass a resolution to continue funding the government in the new fiscal year, what we call a CR, if the 26-year ban on most new offshore drilling is left intact. So some of these leaders of the Republican push to lift drilling restrictions are saying, you know, Congress should not do anything, just let the moratorium lapse, and that's one way to deal with it. The House has passed a bill that would give the states the option of allowing drilling at least 50 miles offshore. The Senate, expected in the next week before they leave, is going to determine whether legislation that would preserve some offshore drilling restrictions is possible. So we'll see if that happens. My bet is they may not resolve this before they leave.
Mm-hmm. And what about this refrain that we're hearing, particularly from the Republicans, this drill, baby, drill? Who is that resonating with among the American people?
Well, I think, you know, the things that hit people about the economy are the things that hit you in the face. And every time you go to the gas pump, it hits you in the face.
Right.
Let's face it, most of us are still paying, more almost $4 a gallon here in outside Washington, D.C., for instance, for gas. And that's a lot of money to pay, and people want something done. The problem is, you know, we don't have a whole lot of control over what OPEC does. And so then people start saying, okay, let's do something to take control of that. Let's take control back of gas prices. Well, one of those things is being able to supply more of our own oil in this country, or our own energy resources in this country. Drilling certainly would allow us to do that. The problem is it takes a long time. That's not going to fix the gas price problem, certainly not next week, certainly not next year, probably, you know, 5 to 10 years down the road. But it goes in that direction. And I think what you saw at the Republican convention, part of this was support for Sarah Palin, and she was, you know, a very engaging speaker, and people were kind of getting on the bandwagon with her. But part of that was sort of this, let's do something. And drilling seems to be a solution, that if we drill, we can get more oil, therefore we have less foreign oil dependence. But then, you know, like most things, it's a much more complicated equation than that. And if you start doing this off of some of these states, you know, even the Republicans, were saying, have some concerns about what that would do to their beaches.
Maddie is next from Waupaca, and we're running short on time, everybody. Hi, Maddie.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I feel that when the Republicans were in control of Congress and the Bush administration has peeled away the regulations that would have kept these financial problems from happening, and I hope that the American people will remember that. Thank you.
Judy?
I don't. There really wasn't a question there.
Yeah,
I think that
okay.
was kind of more a statement. So
all right. Well, we have time for one more call.
Okay.
Roy from Madison. Hi.
Yeah, hi. I have two comments. One is that the question was Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac or an organization like AIG. And my question is coming from Germany, where we have very tight regulation and still are one of the strongest economies in Europe. When you know that the significance of such an organization is such that it is essential for the community that you will bail them out in case of a failure, that you go in with regulation and you don't call it socialism or communism or deregulation of the market, but you just say it is too significant that we can let greed play a role. And in an insurance company, for example, you know, the general question of any profits for to begin with is a whole other story. And my second quick comment is that in the case of Freddie and Fannie, where we're really seeing, you know, the general community having problems in making payments, and my question is with flooding the market with money and basically increase the inflation, but having, you know, entities in Wall Street that really generate money out of intangibles, it seems to me like the money that the common person has to pay off the debt that central banks create by giving out money to banks isn't in our hands to be able to pay it back. It's a very one-sided story where, in essence, you know, many people have a lot of money, and basically the average Joe, if you want to call us that, doesn't have the power, the monetary power to basically, you know, give back the debt to the central banks.
And on that note, we have to just end with that thought. Jody Schneider, thank you very much for making sense of a very complicated topic. It's a hard one, and I appreciate all your insights. Thanks.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it.
Good. Jody Schneider, senior editor of Congressional Quarterly. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the show and John Treader for on-air production here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.